Well, Kansas City author Angela Cervantes has a new book that provides what's been called an age-appropriate glimpse of what happens when immigration status separates families. Angela Cervantes' new book is Gabby, Lost and Found, and it's a book for ages 8 to 12, roughly. And Angela, so nice to have you back. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
You
Thanks.
Bet. Well, your book takes on this very difficult subject of immigration and what happens when immigrant families are torn apart. Why did you want to take this thing on?
You know, it's a subject matter that's very close to my heart, but I think really the story just sort of asserted itself. I didn't write it going, I'm going to tackle this big issue of immigration. That would take a certain amount of strategic thinking, which I do not possess at all when it comes to creative writing. I just kind of write and I get out of the way because the story will kind of take over. But what I did want to do with this book, this first novel, was write a novel about an 11-year-old girl whose family life is falling apart and how her own life falling apart, her mom being deported to Honduras, her estranged father, who she barely knows, moving back in the house to take care of her.
Yeah.
Right. It's not just a great father. He tries, but he's just not so great. And so Gabby's pretty much left to fend for herself. But then things start to brighten up for Gabby. And when her sixth grade class start to volunteer at an animal shelter, she finds this chance to connect with the animals in the same way she's connecting with her own loss of her mother due to this issue.
Yeah, and clearly the animals were taking mom's place on some level here.
Absolutely, because the mother raised Gabby in the book to really love animals, to have a sense of responsibility for all creatures, all humans. And this is her chance to kind of not only find a misfit group of abandoned kittens and stray dogs a forever family, but also to maybe help her feel more connected to her own forever family, mom.
And kids, I'm guessing a lot of them can very much connect with the idea that this girl is seeing her life improve because of how she's relating to these animals.
I hope so. I mean, I really do hope so. And it seems to be the response I'm getting so far is that the kids really first connect to the animal theme kind of the book. They like the idea of her working in the animal shelter, becoming a defender, a protector of these animals. And that's her way of empowering herself, to give herself a voice, to deal with this very sad situation going on in her life.
Yeah. You said this whole topic is near and dear to your heart, Angela.
Sure.
How so?
Well, I mean, I am a Latina, and I grew up in a Mexican-American community in Topeka, Kansas. We were always side by side with new arrivals, families that were coming straight from Mexico or Honduras or Guatemala. And so we were always side by side. We never asked for identification. Hey, do you belong here? You have papers. It was just family. It was community. So for that reason, it's an issue very close to my heart.
Yeah. I gather you've seen exactly this kind of situation transpire in your own life where families are torn apart because of immigration status.
Sure, absolutely. You know, when I was writing this novel, and I did not set out, like I said, to write an immigration novel or a novel, any sort of, you know, witness of deportation. I really never even thought I would write a middle grade novel. I was encouraged to do so, and I was just looking for ideas. And one of the things that came up when I was kind of looking for a plot, because I realized, oh my gosh, I have to have a plot in this story, was I had traveled to Honduras for my full-time work.
Yeah.
And I met a woman at the hotel who spoke perfect English. And I remember asking her, like, how did you learn English so well? Like, you have no accent. It's really excellent. And she told me she had lived in the United States for 8 years and had left a daughter and a son behind because she'd been deported. And I remember her telling me how hard it was for her and what a horrible experience her kids were going through back at home. She was saying that her 8-year-old daughter, no, I think she was younger than that, but she was saying that maybe her 6-year-old daughter was still wetting her bed, and she used to be really excited about going to school, but now she was afraid to go to school because she didn't know what was going to happen when she came back home, if her father was going to be there, if he was going to be taken away. Just that kind of anxiety that, I don't know, it's just heart-wrenching.
You know, what strikes me as so interesting about your book, Gabby, Lost and Found, is this idea, Angela, that you're talking about this issue, and you really get a sense in this country right now that on some very substantial levels that we don't want to talk about this stuff. We don't want to confront this reality that so many of us are aware of, which is that families, in fact, on a daily basis in this country are being ripped apart because of these laws and not taking any side in the debate here,
sure.
but this is just a real situation that's happening every day in this country.
Sure.
And yet you're giving face and voice to at least one little girl's plight here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just one story, one voice. And, you know, I always go back to that quote by Madeleine Engel, who wrote A Wrinkle in Time, one of my favorite
sure.
books, right?
Sure.
And she said, you have to write the book that wants to be written. And if the book is too difficult for grown-ups, then you have to write it for children. And I really believe that.
What an interesting idea.
Yeah.
If it's too difficult for adults, write it for kids.
Exactly. I think kids have ability to have compassion and read these books and really just sort of relate to it. They're, you know, it takes a lot to stir children, I believe. So they're ready for this stuff.
This notion, Angela, that we're not really talking very much about these big, meaty topics, we don't really want to confront it. Do you buy that idea? Are you seeing that across the culture yourself as you live through this?
Well, I mean, I feel like everyone in my community talks about it.
In your community, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some
How
of the
about the
rhetoric,
white community?
Well, I think some of the rhetoric that I also hear about it is always directed at Latino populations in particular, and it's often ugly, and that's what we see. But, you know, I've heard from my editor and my agent that there's a demand for these stories of mixed status, mixed culture children, modern, bilingual Latinas out there. And that wasn't always the case in publishing. You didn't usually hear call outs for that kind of work. But now I'm hearing from teachers. I just recently did a blog for CBC Diversity about my own path in finding diversity in kids lit. And I've already gotten lots of response from teachers all over the country saying this is the kind of book they're looking for their kids. So
do you see yourself going back to this topic as the years come along?
Well, I'd say no right away, but as a writer, you really don't know. I'm already working on my second novel, and this is not a topic in it at all. I mean, this is not the only story I have to tell, and you just never know. I mean, you start writing a story, you think you can figure it all out, but then something takes over. So
why not go back to it?
You mean immigration?
Yeah, if you're so well-positioned to write about it, so knowledgeable.
Sure, it's a good question. I mean, I just think there's many more stories for me to tell. I'm not going to be the spokesperson for immigration or deportation. I'm happy to share my opinion on it, happy to have a voice, you know, in the discussion about it. But there's so many other writers also tackling the subject and some who have much better expertise in it and really know what they're talking about than a little debut author like me. So
Angela Cervantes is our guest. Her new book, Gabby, Lost and Found. You know, one concern I've heard over the years is the lack of Hispanics featured on the covers of books. You know, Scholastic is publishing this book. And I couldn't help but notice that the girl on the cover of your book has her back turned, so you really can't see her nationality.
Sure.
How did you feel about that?
I was fine with the cover. We went over that cover several times. I mean, and again, I'm a debut author. I'm all new to this. I'm just navigating the publishing world and how it works.
So publish the thing and I'll be thrilled.
You know, a lot of it was, yeah, absolutely that. But they had gone through several different covers, several different new titles for the book. And all of them I liked, honestly. I thought all of them were great. I was like, yay, they're beautiful. I'll take it. I just think that hasn't been my experience. And I kind of like it that they don't have her face in it. To me, I can tell that she's Latina, but
because of her straight black hair.
The dark hair and even her skin. But and plus, I have a lot of insider information. I know that they brought in a young Latina model to do this shoot in New York.
There you go.
I have some background information on it.
Yeah.
But I like that they don't have her face in it, just from a big-time reader's opinion. Because when they start showing people's faces on the covers, then I don't have the chance to create what I think this character looks like.
Yeah.
And I do that. I mean, don't you do that
sure,
in your books?
Like
you start thinking, oh, I can see Tom Cruise playing this role.
Wanna,
or I can see, I can see someone playing this role. I start creating what I think they look like.
I miss the days when you could do that and not be influenced by who the star is going to be who
exactly,
plays that person. Yeah.
Exactly. Now I always think of that little Harry Potter guy the way he looks, you know,
and
in my mind I had something else figured out for him. So I kind of like that. I think that's really important. So
do you think then that the children's literature, the whole idea of the experience of Hispanics in this country that is receiving some attention, or is it still an overlooked topic too much of the time in your view?
Well, I think think there, I know a lot of great Latino authors who have never been published, maybe because they desire to ever be published, or maybe because they feel like they haven't been given a fair shake in the publishing business. But I do believe it's changing. And I think it's changing, Steve, because the population is growing and our wonderful teachers out there and librarians are demanding books with kids that look like the kids that come to school and come to the library. That's really important to them. And I agree with that.
Yeah. That's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as a young girl myself, as a big time reader, as a child, I mean, that's the one thing I did all the time was read, read, read. I loved books, and I always would question, why aren't there any Latina, you know, with names like Gomez or Cervantes or Garcia in my books? And I was always on a quest to find those books. And I don't think I really found those books until I was probably well into college, maybe. Yeah.
You know, Angela, the fact that you didn't find those names in books for a long time, how did that affect you?
Well, you know, it took, I think at first it disheartened me a little bit. I was discouraged, but it really, I'm one of those people that I just kind of get more motivated whenever I see obstacles or people tell me I can't do something. And I loved writing. I loved reading. So I think I was just always feeling like we have to write our own stories and we'll just write the best books we can write and I'll write the best books I can write and then they won't be able to turn it down.
You know, you mentioned you were raised in Topeka.
Yeah.
What was the Hispanic community like in those days? And what do you recall about those days?
Sure. I had a great childhood in Topeka, Kansas. I grew up in a community called Oakland. It was named there for the big oak trees that they had there in the community. Mm-hmm. It was typically German. And then the Mexican-Americans came in working for the railroads. And so there were railroads all surrounding us. All our fathers and uncles worked in the railroads. They were hardworking men. You could see them walking down the street when the bell rang. And when the bell buzzed again, they'd go back to work. And so I grew up in a very proud Mexican-American community. We were very in touch with our Mexican-American heritage. But there was also a lot of pride in being an American. So it was a great childhood. Yeah.
Angela Cervantes is our guest. Again, her book, Gabby Lost and Found. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888. Our email address, UpToDate at KCUR.org. You can also tweet us at KCUR, at KCUR UpToDate. You know, after you graduated from KU, you wound up in the Valley or Brownsville, Texas.
Wow, you did your research.
Yeah. Well, I know what you had for breakfast today, too, Angela. And you made some bad choices there, by the way.
I did.
Why did you end up in Brownsville, Texas?
You know, I joined the Domestic AmeriCorps. The Domestic Peace Corps. It's called AmeriCorps.
Sure.
And so right after college, and I wanted to learn Spanish very badly. I grew up speaking sort of a pico de gallo de Spanish, you know, just here and there little words. Spanglish is what I call it. Everyone calls it Spanglish. And I really wanted to master Espanol. So I decided here's my chance to get work experience, here's the job to serve the country, and here's the job to also learn Espanol. And in Brownsville, Texas, which is borders with Mexico, that was my opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked as a PR specialist, and I got to... Well, for the program itself, for the other VISTA AmeriCorps volunteers, all the good things they were doing in the community, I got to basically espouse, you know, write up news releases, show up with my camera and take pictures and build newsletters. And it was really fun because I got to, I didn't have like just one singular piece kind of AmeriCorps experience. I got to see what everyone else was doing and kind of jump and join their activities with youth, with parents, with volunteers, with moms, everything.
What was Brownsville, Texas like? What was that community like back in those days?
Oh, I love Brownsville, Texas. I really do. You know, it's a new world. It was a new world to me. Everyone there spoke Spanish and English. You could go into a grocery store and one minute they'd speak English and turn around and speak perfect Spanish. And I really envied that. I loved that. It was very Norteño culture. So lots of Norteño music. It's a type of music for being the northern part of, I guess, Mexico, Texas. So, I mean, it was just a wonderful culture. And that's where I learned to, you know, it's when I really started to accept that I was going to be a writer and it's okay to go around and say you're a writer. And I just really absorbed a lot of the culture and a lot of different characters that I still think are actually in my first novel right now.
You know, I think of cities along the border, and I always think of these days, unfortunately, I think of bad things like drugs and everything else.
Well, we definitely had that too. I mean, there were a lot of youth involved in gangs and drugs. It certainly did exist. But, you know, that's why the AmeriCorps volunteers were there, were to work with the youth and give them some more positive activities to participate in instead of going the other way.
What's Brownville, Texas, like these days?
I haven't been back there in a long time. It's been almost maybe 5 or 6 years, so I wouldn't know. But, you know, I'm not real sure.
You know, after you graduated from KU, I mentioned you went to Brownsville, and then you also lived in Guadalajara, Mexico for 2 years, teaching English and literature there. What sticks out to you from your time in Guadalajara, and where is that exactly?
Well, Guadalajara is probably about 8 hours from Mexico City. It's sort of central and west. It's in the beautiful state of Jalisco. It's the second largest city in Mexico. But it's without being crazy busy like Mexico City, it's a little bit more calm. And I was a teacher there for 2 years, and I taught American Lit, I taught creative writing, I taught basic English at a school that was kids that were very privileged. So it wasn't a public government school. These kids actually, their parents rolled up in Humvees and Mercedes,
wow,
and BMWs and dropped them off. And so these kids were very well off. It was a school where the kids learned English, Spanish, and French since they were in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time I got them in middle school and high school, they were fluent in
mm-hmm.
English. They could read The Giver. They could read A Wrinkle in Time. They could read Shakespeare,
yeah,
just as anyone else I know. And they got really excited about it. And that's probably my highlight from that whole time there, is that I was just so influenced by the amazing students I had that really loved English and wanted to learn it, because it's a matter of making a living for them. Do you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
Like,
for
it meant
them,
something to them.
Absolutely. If you want to get a job, a good job, and you want to travel, English is imperative for them. So it wasn't just taking Spanish here or French just to have a fun language to speak. It was like that was going to be part of their life, part of their living. It was necessary. I also worked teaching English to businessmen at night, and in order for them to keep their job, they had mm-hmm. to be able to master English. So you always had a very attentive group in your classroom.
A very different experience for a teacher than
absolutely.
You might get otherwise. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Again, our guest, Angela Cervantes, her book, Gabby, Lost and Found. Let's go back to some phone calls here. John from Kansas City, Kansas. John, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning, Eric.
Go ahead, John.
I'd like to ask you, Angela, about the music scene in Topeka. How it's evolved over the years, you know, the Tejano bands and the other influences. What you know about that? How you've experienced that?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
The Mexican culture in Topeka, I think he's driving at here.
Yeah, Topeka.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I grew up right there in Oakland, like 5 blocks from where that big Mexican fiesta takes place every year. I mean, me and my family used to go down there and, you know, gosh, we used to make paper flowers until our fingers were just like coarse and hard. Oh, my gosh. And the music is great. And they still have this great fiesta every year in July right there at Our Lady Guadalupe Church. And so, yeah, I mean, I grew up with the food, the music, the culture. I mean, as close to Mexico as you can get in Kansas is what I say about Oakland and Topeka, Kansas.
That's great. How much, you know, going back to your book, Angela, Gabby Lost and Found,
sure,
how was Gabby's mother discovered as being in this country illegally? What's the story there that you talk about in the book?
Sure. In the book, Gabby's mom basically works at a factory, and there's a raid, and the factory's raided, and it's really not even supposed to be the day that she works there. She was actually just taking a shift for another worker who's child was sick. So it just happens, wrong place, wrong time, gets raided and deported back to her homeland of Honduras.
And how does that hit her?
Well, by the time you start the book, it's already been almost 2 or 3 months that her mom has been gone. And Gabby has this belief that her mom will return. And so there's this ongoing communication between them on the phone of like, when are you coming back? You are coming back, right? That sort of longing and yearning for her mom to come back, even though Gabby knows that that journey is going to be very tough. And that's eventually, you know, without giving too much away in the book, but that's part of the struggle in the book, is that Gabby believes her mom will return, believes her mom should return. And Gabby's mother's kind of dealing with, it's so dangerous, I'm scared, and she tries and she attempts, and I'll leave it at that, but yeah.
And again, those kinds of conversations take place in this country every day.
Oh, absolutely, for sure. And it's very sad. I mean, I think the impact it makes on children who can't be with their mom or lose their father or a brother or sister, to something as deportation is really tragic.
Again, Angela Cervantes' new book is titled Gabby, Lost and Found. And Angela, it's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you
so much. Thanks for coming in. Always
Absolutely.
Good to have you.
Thank you.
You bet. You can find more information about all our broadcasts. Just go to kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR. Up to date, you can follow me at Steve Kraske. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.